Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horik and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys in the Netherlands.
Welcome, Michelle Huff from User Testing on the Marketing Technology Podcast.
Great, thanks for having me.
Michelle, relationship goes back a few years when you were a CMO at Acton Software and you moved to User Testing. Yes. I followed you a little on LinkedIn, of course, with some other people that you're also working with on in your team at User Testing. I think it's awesome. It's interesting what you're doing. Could you explain to the listeners a little bit about your background and what you're doing, what User Testing does, and how that's, let's say, placed in the whole MarTech landscape?
Yeah, so maybe a little bit about me. I'm a chief marketing officer. My background kind of comes through the roots of product and product marketing. I've run different marketing and product teams across, you know, Acton, as we just talked about, as well as Salesforce, Oracle. What's interesting from a MarTech standpoint is my roots came from content management, web content management. So I have a lot of background on, you know, back in the day when before a lot of marketing automation even existed, you know, how did people create websites and try to generate leads from that? And then at Salesforce, a lot of experience around managing all the customer data, which is huge for marketing. And then I had some experience, obviously, at Acton with marketing automation. And then here at User Testing, it's been a lot more about how do we get input and fast feedback from customers, which has been immensely helpful. It's something I've always done in my past around getting insights and input from real customers and prospects in everything we do. So it's been a fun background of even just being able to see the different size and scales of technology companies, but also just being able to have a lot of in-depth knowledge around a lot of the different parts of the MarTech stack.
Wow, and that's actually what you're saying, you know, is a rule. I would say one of the first rules you learn when you're in school and marketing school, so to say, what we do at marketing is we build products and services based on the needs of people. So what User Testing does is helping you define those needs, find out what those needs are. What I see a lot happening online is that marketers are claiming or having the tools to do all kinds of user testing, like A/B testing, they're using visual website optimizer or doing split URL tests, doing testing in emails. They have all these tools, but they hardly ever use them. How is your experience there?
Yes. Well, you know, in fact, we have some of them too. And what we've seen is sometimes when you think about those types of testing tools, I think they're immensely important, but they shouldn't be the complete picture. What we often see is, you know, you start testing what works, A versus B. Mm-hmm. And eventually you think, oh, A wins. Great. So then you start using A. The problem is you're not quite sure why it won. Right. And it's always the why. So you're not quite sure. Then the next time you're going to run the test, more and more we're seeing, they're kind of 50-50, you know, like one's 56 and one's, you know, just slightly different. And so you're kind of at a loss. And so when you don't really have what I kind of call customer intuition, right? If you don't really take the time to actually talk to prospects, talk to customers, when you're not selling, right, it's not about you getting on a call with someone and pitching your product, but actually mm-hmm. being curious and asking them questions about who they are and what excites them and, you know, understanding the buying journey from their perspective. And sometimes even seeing it, because it's so different when you just ask someone in a survey versus, you know, like you and I just having a conversation right now, it's just different. And if you watch someone go through it, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes even the person can't articulate what their frustration is, but you see it when you watch it. So I believe having empathy, being able to actually talk to your customers gives you that intuition so that you start understanding how to make more options that you can use A/B testing for, right? So like, and all these different things that you can test. And then you start thinking, oh, here's why. And how do you, you know, because at the end of the day, it's more of an emotional connection that you're trying to make with your customers. And if you've never spoken to them before, it's really hard to make that emotional connection, from my point of view.
Yeah. So what you're basically saying is, well, all testing in, let's say, A-B testing or split URL testing usually starts with some kind of assumption, right? So version A should be this, version B should be that. We're going to test which one wins, and the winning part will be sent to the rest or will be shown to the rest. Exactly. So what user testing does is will help you to find the C version or the better version of or AB, because what you're doing is actually finding out what kind of assumptions work, which what kind of emotions really live with your customer. Is that correct when I'm phrasing it like that, or am I a little off here?
Yeah, no, exactly. Sometimes, you know, people call it qualitative versus quantitative. And so everything in qualitative that's more of discovery is definitely in helping you come up with those assumptions, right? Like, oh, you know, we should test to see how well this type of message resonates with this type of person and this type of buyer. We also see it in more of the in combination with some of the quantitative with the test, because sometimes what happens is you've run your tests and then you're presenting and you're saying, hey, we ran all these tests and went over thousands of people and we now have a score, an NPS score of this, or this particular ad campaign won. And usually when people are presenting to either, you know, the CMO or I'm presenting to the board or the CEO, people will say, why do you think that's true? And some people will also use kind of user testing in combination with that, so that instead of them saying, well, I think it's because, they actually play video clips of the person talking. And so you're really letting the voice of the customer explain, you know, like what drew them to that, what they liked about it.
Isn't, Michelle, isn't user testing and humanizing the data?
Yeah, no, that's very well put. I think, you know, sometimes we talk about how, you know, our product, we've been calling it the Human Insight Platform. And Human Insight is not, you know, I recognize it's not a term that everyone wakes up and is using. But it's something I think more and more you're starting to see people talk about, because oftentimes we think about insight and you see it oftentimes paired with data, right? Data. I think data and huge amounts of it is super helpful and it's directional as well. But oftentimes you gain a lot of insight from speaking to real people as well. So I think it's really using the combination.
Yeah, we've had a few podcasts earlier. We had an interview with Ali from Task Analytics, and they have a method of surveying people that come to the site and asking what was their motive to come to the site. That's based on top tasks, Jeremy McGovern's, mm-hmm. and that gives you an insight of the why. And I think that with users testing, you really get the human why that people are coming to your website or using or interacting with your services and your products. With your background of marketing automation and now user testing, do you really feel that marketing automation and this kind of user testing, this kind of human approach, is really a necessity to get real good insight?
Yeah, you know, I think it first starts with the persona. So there's actually something that I've been really starting to do internally. I've been thinking of as customer immersion hours. I think sometimes people have heard of it as exposure hours, but it's the how often am I personally, as well as my team, being exposed to our customers and prospects. And so we're pulling together from just different interviews, little clips and videos so that people can really start understanding the personas better. And we have, within our product, we have a lot of marketers, but if you can imagine a lot of user experience and customer experience researchers and designers use user testing quite a bit. Product teams do. So we have a lot of different personas and at different levels, because understanding the heads of those departments versus the people who are running and coming up with the assumptions and hypotheses and testing things are very different. So for me, it really starts from there. But then it goes throughout everything. And so we even have my head of demand gen does a lot of testing. We've been starting to do more and more. And like we did some a recent webinar, and we came up with a variety of different titles. And, you know, normally what post people do is you just come up with a few, and sometimes the person who's making the decision might ask other marketers, right? Like, say, hey, what do you guys think? And on the team, and it goes, ah, I like this one better. You know, and sometimes people might be more sophisticated and they're doing things like they're running a split test with marketing automation and see who registers for what one versus the other. But on the landing page, it needs to be, you know, a title. And so we've run some tests, and it was interesting because you gain interesting insights, right? Like you learn from this, our buyers, the one that the head of demand gen liked the least was actually the one that won overwhelmingly. So that was a good reminder. That we're not always the best expert. And then, but what was interesting is it wasn't just like who won, they described why, and they described like that what draws them to listen, to take, you know, an hour out of their day to watch a podcast, and the types of themes they like. And so it's just an interesting thing because you learn things you might not be asking when people are just sharing their thoughts out loud. And it's really been a better guiding principle when he's coming up with new webinars moving forward.
What also what triggered me, because with user testing, it's not just purely software that you offer, but you have like a whole user test community. I can imagine that if you're a startup, you usually don't have a lot of customers, or maybe you don't have any customers. So your personas are quite theoretically.
Yes.
So by using your user tester community, you will actually have real people that you can test your personas instead of going ask your customers, because a startup doesn't have that. Do you see that in the same way, or have you got the experience that startup organizations are using you to actually create their personas?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is we have this amazing customer base of really small companies, because exactly what you say is, you know, you're trying to at that stage find market fit, and oftentimes, I mean, the hardest thing is you're trying to get people to talk to you, and you're trying to get opinions. The founder of User Testing, one of the co-founders, he used to talk about how at the very beginning, when they were super scrappy and starting up the company, a lot of it came to, he would stand in grocery store lines. And he said it was perfect because he felt like he had a captive audience, and he would ask them questions and get their feedback, you know, while standing in grocery store lines. But, you know, obviously that's not always your target persona. So we have small companies using it. You know, I'm not sure if it's just always building personas, but it's for them, they're testing their product concept. They're saying, hey, we have this concept for a business and a concept for this, you know, and getting reactions to it, right? And you can pick different personas and you can find out, oh, there's pockets of people who resonate with what I'm building more than others. And that helps then around your go-to-market model. Or they'll have, say, you know, they'll show the whole homepage and say, okay, go to this and tell me, and you're using your words, what do you think we do? Right. And that's such an interesting thing where people can react and they'll say, oh, and they'll click around and say, oh, this is super interesting, and what they don't like at all. And everyone's kind of gives their opinion. But we have obviously these really small companies all the way through these large, you know, international enterprise companies who are using us across thousands of people within an organization because they're trying to drive empathy. And make sure that everyone who's building a customer experience actually talks to customers. And you'd think it's easy because they have lots of customers, but you can imagine in large companies, you know, sometimes with GDPR regulations, or sometimes it's because marketing or sales won't let these people talk to different people. You know, it's like, oh, I've already sent the email, you know, we've exhausted the list. You can't reach out and try to talk to them again, right? There's all these different rules and reasons that people have found it so much easier to go through user testing. And then a lot of times people too will say, hey, we talk to our customers, but I also want to talk to prospective, right? I want to be able to reach out to someone who's not already, who doesn't already have brand awareness of us, who doesn't already know us in any way.
Okay. Michelle, I've looked at your website and you already mentioned that term, and that's the term empathy. And sometimes people mix up empathy and sympathy. We're not talking about sympathy here, quite clearly, but empathy. You're talking about empathy gaps, and you also had a presentation on the whole empathy thing, customer centricity. Can you tell a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so, you know, in some sense, I think, you know, you're starting to see a lot more about empathy, and I think that that can be used across a variety of different areas. And as you say, it's not sympathy, but oftentimes, you know, it's really trying to see something from another person's point of view. So, you know, what I've been talking about and what we talk about user testing with this empathy gap is what we've seen a lot of leaders, a lot of companies do is really starting to focus a lot more on customer experience, right? They've realized, I think as one of the analysts has over, it was about 80% of companies who were surveyed said they're actually competing now on the basis of the customer experience that they're providing. And so people are putting huge amounts of investment in it. The challenge is, I think it was Capgemini did a recent survey where they asked companies, how many of you would say that you're customer-centric, customer-focused? And 75% of companies said yes, right? We're customer-centric. And I'm sure they're putting a ton of investment into it. But then they actually asked their customers, if they thought those companies were customer centric, and only 30% of them believe that to be true.
Well, that's right? That's not a gap. That's a ravine.
I know, right? That's huge, right? 30% and it's disappointing, right? Because I believe every company that says they're customer centric, they're putting some level of investment, cultural change, right? They're making changes, and oftentimes when I even think about a lot of marketing technology, there are a lot of mobile applications, websites, chatbots, you know, different things that we're doing in the spirit of improving the customer experience. But, you know, it's a shame if your customers don't believe you are. I didn't in that survey. Kind of
have you got any idea why that big difference is? Is that because we are too much focused on data, that we are too much talking about customers instead with customers?
Yeah, you know, I mean, for me, I'd love to say, I don't ever believe it's only just one thing, but I do feel, and when we've looked and talked and read a lot, a big part of it is that we are more and more disconnected from our customers, right? If you think about the more technology we've put in, right, and all the people who are building these journeys, building the solutions, even let's just say writing the scripts for these different chatbots or different types of exchanges, you know, how many of them have ever talked to a customer, right? And it's so different if you can imagine, you know, years ago when I grew up, right, like we went to banks and we stood in line, right? And yep. Then you would, you know, talk to the teller, and the teller, you know, would be watching you in your queues, and let's just say it was a really bad day and you stood in line for half an hour, right? And you walk up and they can see on your face, you're frustrated. You just wasted 30 minutes of your time standing there. And more than likely, the person's going to respond based on all these different types of cues. And maybe the person might even explain, oh, you know, I'm so sorry. Thank you for waiting. We had a family emergency and, you know, we haven't been able to get another person in. And suddenly the customer has empathy as well for the whole situation, right? And so you have more of this kind of personal connection that you can benefit from. And the interesting thing is, I don't think anyone today would ever want to go back to those times and say, oh yeah, anytime I want to check my balance, I want to go wait in 30 minutes in line, right? So I think we've been advancing. But we now have all these people building experiences that don't have that actual empathy and emotional connection. And so you just base on what you would do, right? Like, here's how I would love to be talked to. Here's how I would like the experience I think is interesting. And you're not always a representative of your buyer. And then I also think adding on top of that, customer expectations keep changing. So people are not just judging the customer experience compared to your peers or the people in your market, right? They'll base the digital experience on the best experience they've had to date, right? They'll go to Amazon and then they'll go to your site. And even if you have nothing to do with e-commerce and buying things, they'll say, oh, like, you know, it was just so much easier on this other experience than what I'm on yours. And somehow, right, you've kind of dropped a level in their eyes.
Yeah, well, I personally think it's good that user testing and on similar possibilities are available, because otherwise we get too much lost in technology and, well, looking for automated processes, etc. that make us quite, well, I don't say lazy, but
unhuman.
Yeah, but it is it business doing business is doing business between humans. It's people. It's always about people, and having tools and that actually can boost the empathy part is has got my blessings. I think another thing that we would like to know, because this is the Marketing Technology Podcast, is what kind of MarTech stack do you use with user testing?
Because I think it's very, you know, you guys are obviously doing something very good. You're based in beautiful Seattle, you know, but you're competing with all the other tech giants that are there. Salesforce, Amazon, they bought complete blocks there, but you've grown to almost 400 people. So you're obviously doing something good. From the marketing perspective, how do you manage this growth? How do you build your demand generation? What kind of MarTech stack are you using? What tips can you share there? Or do you want to share?
Definitely. I'd say, and then just so you, we're headquartered in San Francisco, but I'm based in Seattle. So we have a great remote culture, as well as you said, we've been growing tremendously, which has been fun. And I came in a little over a year ago. So some of the tech stack I inherited and some of it we've been building along the way. Mm-hmm. What makes actually user testing issues, as we just talked about, little companies, really small companies, all the way to really large companies use user testing. And so if you can imagine, you know, selling to a really small business is very different than selling to a global enterprise business. And we have every segment in between. And so we have different go-to-market models. And so I've been kind of building out kind of a different way of demand gen based on our segments. And, our tech stack, we use Marketo. We've used Intercom. Actually, one of the things that we rolled out was even called Conversica, which been really compelling, really interesting for us actually as well. We love Sixter for our email. One thing that we've rolled out, we're actually doing our very first multi-city customer conference next month, which is I'm excited about. We're getting close to selling out one of the cities, and we rolled out Splash. I don't know if you've heard of that, but they do all these events. It's a great kind of out of the box way for us for all the different events to do all the whole registration process as well as purchasing process all kind of in one system. And that's been working pretty well for us. And then we use user testing too.
Of course. So, so you're using Salesforce as a CRM and you have attached Marketo to that. Any best practices on that? Because we have had people before on the podcast that were using either Marketo or they chose to adopt Salesforce Pardot, or you know, any best practices there, because it's using marketing automation is by different companies the whole adoption curve is completely different. So is there any best practices you can share there on Marketo and Salesforce?
Yeah. So with Marketo, so I think about from just even an organizational structure. So I have a head of corporate marketing where my brand and demand generation all falls into. Mm-hmm. I have a head of customer marketing. So all the things that we do post-sale, nurturing and kind of conversations are kind of in our customer marketing team. I also run product management, product marketing as well, but I have a marketing and web operations team. And so that's where a lot of my whole tech stack sits. I like to feel like sometimes marketing almost runs our little mini IT shop. So we have so much technology that, you know, you just kind of blink and suddenly you could just have all these different tech purchases. So I found that while, you know, you can have people really own budget to spend on a lot of programs, I really like to have a lot more oversight on tech. And mm-hmm. so different departments will fund and champion different technology that they're wanting to bring in to support, whether it be customer marketing or whether it be, for example, I have Influtive there. But we always make sure that marketing ops has some level of oversight and usually helps people roll things out, works with our internal like business systems team that's, you know, not in marketing, but that works across the whole org. And we have had to, you know, rebuild quite a bit because the company has been kind of shifting, growing. As you can imagine, a big company and our little company that's been growing super fast is you're constantly evolving your go-to-market models. And so we've been looking at, we had to make a lot of different changes, but we went through and we're kind of building out, you know, some more of our consistent programs and some of our nurture tracks. And then we've been kind of looking at every segment and seeing kind of different ways that we want to handle communications. And then we've brought in different parts. Like we ran our first ABM program this year. And so we're kind of building in different systems to handle more of the one-to-one communications and working with our SDR team.
Okay. So when you're using all these, let's say, different tools, tool sets, you're doing a lot of mm-hmm. sometimes trial by error, trying out stuff. Is there something you can share, like a tactic that you've tried and you said, well, that's something we're definitely not going to adopt anymore?
Let's see. One that we're not going to adopt anymore.
Difficult question, but you know, there's always something, you know, because you've tried it and some other marketers might consider trying it, you know, and I'm not sure what it is, but there might be some tactics or tools that you say, well, those were not particularly successful for us.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of them. There's ones where, you know, just on a really basic level, just when we've been running, you know, a lot of our customer marketing initiatives, you know, one of the first things we've had to do, if you can imagine, I think we're so good on the demand gen side normally collectively as marketers where we have a whole calendar for when we mm-hmm. schedule things. But I think we're a little haphazard when it comes to customers because a part of it too is so many other teams talk to customers beyond just marketing. And so we've had to kind of try to build more consistent calendars, but we had a very generic approach to customers. And so those weren't working very well. Like we had, you know, so it feels basic, but we found, just taking the time to invest a little bit on, our data cleanup and better segmentation and actually, understanding, you know, a little bit more about our customer personas and what makes them, want to better adopt the system and learn has helped us kind of even based on usage, kind of figure out how to better segment versus just typical, you know, just persona, you know, demographic data about our customers. And so those ones, yeah, the pretty vanilla things were not great. You know, we also had pretty haphazard ways of rolling out things too, where people would buy and then we just wouldn't think about, we'd only just think about how marketing would roll it out and not the impact on everyone else. And so much of what we do impacts other teams. And so, you know, we had issues where we'd roll it out and then everyone would, you know, it turned into like a few weeks of people like, what is this? And I'm like, this just changed my system. And so I've been trying to have the team do a better job of when we roll out tech, actually kind of think through what is that whole onboarding of the tech going to look like, what other teams we're going to impact, and then making sure we get their buy-in and their understanding. And, I mean, the goal is to have all the teams where they might have a slight benefit, like anxious and excited for what we roll out versus surprised and like a little confused. So there's all these different kind of processes we're changing, as well as how we approach things, and just even taking the time to think through what a rollout even looks like mentally, I think has helped people even kind of decide when, you know, oh, this is actually a lot bigger than I think. Maybe I should take on less projects so I can just focus on that. So it's really helped us better prioritize too.
Yeah. And even, you know, basic as it might seem, you know, I would still guess over 90-95% of marketers still adopt a generic approach. And what you're basically saying is, well, use segmentation to personalize your message to the right, well, offer the right message to the right people at the right time. But by the way, you know, I don't know if you read the Flip the Script book, but there's this chapter in it that says the power of plain vanilla. But, you know, it's about your vanilla approach. But it's worthwhile reading that part about vanilla. But that's just a side joke here.
Yeah, I will.
Okay, do that. It's chapter 5 in this Flip the Script. Nothing wrong with plain vanilla.
Nothing wrong with plain. I like my vanilla. My daughter loves it too.
But it's very important to get out of the ivory tower.
Totally. Well, occasionally you want to put a little sprinkles on top. Sometimes I have a little chocolate sauce.
Yeah. Michelle, user testing, it's American, but you've got customers all over the world. We've got a lot of European Dutch listeners, and they listen and say user testing, and before they go to the site. So, what can you offer Dutch or European listeners?
Yeah, so if you do go to our site or kind of look us up, you might notice we had some big news a few months ago where we opened up an office in Edinburgh. And so it's our first as user testing location, you know, outside. And so basically we're really excited about that. We had about 10% of our revenue actually coming from Europe already, even coming from people selling and in the United States. And so we really wanted to start bringing I have now a marketer, but also sales and customer success. We have a whole development organization now and really bringing that to Europe. So we, you know, from Netherlands and European, we do, as you mentioned, give access to all these different people who can provide you insight. We have, you know, for anyone who's trying to explore going to market, in the United States, it's great because you don't have to fly. You can run these almost mini focus groups in a way and do that from the comfort of your home and your own office and whatever country you're at. And then we've started to build out, some of the different international panel. For example, we've got a stronger one in the UK as well. So I would say, kind of depends on, as you say, oftentimes, like what type of insight you're trying to get and from whom. And we can, I'd love to make sure that we have a chance to chat, but we're going to continue to keep growing internationally. And I'm sure over time, maybe the next time we chat, there'll be more and more for the rest of the different countries too.
Well, great. Great to hear.
Yeah. I think we're going to have to round up here because, you know, we're in almost half an hour. And I think people want to reach out will contact you through LinkedIn. So what we'll do is we'll put your LinkedIn profile and of course a link to the user testing website in the show notes, so people will be able to find you. And I would say, you know, I'm connected to you on LinkedIn. You know, people do connect to Michelle because, you know, she shares some valuable stuff. And thank you very much for being on the podcast, Michelle.
Yeah, thank you. And if you do reach out and connect, just let me know if you heard me on the show and I'll make sure I remember that.
Okay, great, great. It was great speaking to you again, Michelle.
Good talking to you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe to our iTunes channel. Also, if you want to be interviewed on this podcast, or if you have any questions on marketing technology, send me an email on e.crum@marketingguys.nl. Thank you.